Hello, and welcome to Real Talk, where curiosity chases truth. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, and I'm happy you can join me today for a Real Talk special. Our topic today is psychedelics as medicine, specifically psilocybin, shrooms. From Timothy Leary in the 60s to Michael Pollan today, there has been a cadre of curious authors, psychologists, scientists, and mystics who've been exploring the potential benefits of psychedelics. Their findings have convinced enough people in medical and psychiatric fields that these drugs can have positive effects on mental health issues that they're quietly swimming into the mainstream. To walk us through this evolution from recreational to medicinal psilocybin is Islander Shango Lose. In 2015, Shango established a cannabis patient outreach and education organization called Vimia, which has gained national recognition. He hosts a podcast at shapingfire.com, where he has interviewed the top minds in cannabis and mushroom medicine, science, and cultivation. Shango has been featured in Newsweek, ABC News, Modern Farmer, and most cannabis magazines, and here today on Voice of Vashon. Welcome, Shango.
Thank you, Susan. It's nice to be here, and it's great to be back on Voice of Vashon.
Welcome. Welcome. As we get started, would you please give us a brief update on the current laws around psilocybin psychedelics here in King County and nationally?
Sure. Since we're talking mostly about mushrooms today, I'll focus on that first. And if you have follow-ups on other psychedelics, we can talk about that. The main reason why the laws have been changing is that the King County Council voted on March 24th of this year to essentially decriminalize psychedelic mushrooms in King County. Now, it's not officially decriminalization, but they did three things. The first thing is they expressed support for the continued research into entheogens, including psilocybin mushrooms. Two, they expressed support for the eventual state and federal decriminalization, and they requested that investigation and arrest of prosecution of adults involved with psychedelic mushrooms be the lowest priority and money not be spent on it. And so while there is not an actual change in the law, the King County Council has decided no longer to prosecute individuals for individual use. Now, it is still a Schedule I drug at the federal level, and that has not changed. And also, the laws in King County have not changed. It is still very much illegal to have, possess, and use psychedelic mushrooms. However, the King County Council has made it the lowest priority and discourages the enforcement of it. You may recall back when cannabis was first legalized, the same thing happened in King County.
Right.
And when the sheriff at the time, Sheriff Urquhart, used to say, "We're not going to come to your home to bust you for growing marijuana. But if we have to come to your house for domestic violence and we find your plants, we're going to get you for the plants. If we come to your house because you're shooting your gun off and you have plants, we're going to bust you for the plants. But if you just have the plants, it's going to be okay." Same thing around mushrooms now. So long as you're only breaking that one law, they do not have any interest in doing law enforcement for individual people for individual self-consumption.
Does that law apply to other psychedelics like LSD or ketamine or MDMA?
No, the King County Council rule that was passed in March is specifically towards psychedelic mushrooms.
Well, that's weird. Why mushrooms and nothing else?
The science is getting stronger and stronger about the benefits of psychedelics, specifically the mushrooms. And with adoption of legal mushrooms in so many municipalities around the country, we are seeing not only is it it doesn't create a lot of chaos in these municipalities because it's such a low abuse drug, and also the benefits just keep on stacking and stacking and stacking. So, governments, especially enlightened ones, more like we get here on the West Coast, they are trying to create opportunities for people to heal while the laws are sorting themselves out long term.
So let's go to that. What are the benefits of using psilocybin, whether in a micro or a macro dosing situation?
Let's handle those separately.
Okay.
And so people turn to macro dosing for a range of reasons. Some are simply looking for a release of their sense of self as an identity and to meld more with nature and their God and the universe. Taking a macro dose of mushrooms, you can think of this as more than 2 grams of the fruiting body. It gives an experience of connection with everything. And that can be used in people's everyday life to decrease anxiety, to increase life's meaning, and is now becoming very prevalent for people who are near their end of life. And it's being used in palliative care for people who are afraid about the transition to the next world, whatever happens. And taking macro doses of mushrooms tends to open people's hearts to that transition. Now, what is far more common, though, at this point is microdosing and is more universally recommended. Macrodosing is not for everybody because it is such a large, chaotic mental experience, right? However,
Can it be managed? I mean, can it be controlled so that the experience is not necessarily overwhelming?
Yes and yes and no. It certainly can be controlled mostly by set and setting. So when you're doing a macro dose, you want to make sure you're at a location that is not going to disturb you, somewhere where you feel safe and somewhere where you feel that you will not be hindered by others. But then also your headspace going into it should be more positive. Psychedelics tend to increase the intensity of whatever you're already feeling.
Oh.
And so if you're having an already bad day, it's not recommended that you have a macro dose of mushrooms on top of that to extend that. A sunny day down on the beach by yourself or with friends. You know, some people find it valuable to involve clinicians, which is a rather new thing. But the idea is set and setting, because there's no reason you have to have. I mean, you don't ever really have to have a bad experience if you set yourself up in advance. However, the microdosing is really the direction that most of the research is going in right now, and what we're seeing the most of on Vashon itself. We're seeing people who are taking a very small amount of the mushroom on a near daily basis with the hopes of getting this small amount of psilocybin into their body every day. So the psilocybin can encourage the housekeeping activities that it promotes. And over time, people get excellent benefits from that.
Housekeeping activities, like... I'm thinking people might be using it to manage anxiety and depression. And if so, how does that compare to pharmacological antidepressants?
If I may, I'm going to answer your question a slightly different way.
Okay.
The benefits that people come to microdosing for tend to fall into three buckets, which I'll hit on just very briefly. The first one is pruning. The psilocybin encourages the brain to prune excessive dendrites that may be in the brain, which the more dendrites you have, the more thoughts you're going to have. And this can create a sense of overwhelm for some people, confusion. If you're neurodivergent, it can create a sense of overwhelm. And by pruning these dendrites, you can also lessen the re-experience of trauma from your past, which is why they started giving this to veterans. Because what's happening is the psilocybin is, to put it in kind of layman's terms, it is de-emphasizing dendrites and neural pathways that the brain has determined are no longer as necessary. So if you have a trauma in your past, the brain may choose to go and remove neuron by neuron this past, so it becomes less and less likely for you to re-experience this traumatic event. So this is bucket number one, pruning, the taking of things away, making your brain more efficient.
And so the psilocybin aids that pruning?
Correct. It is providing your necessary materials for that process.
Ah.
The second bucket is redundancy. So it's kind of like on the opposite side of the pruning, which is taking away. The redundancy is adding. So your memories of good experiences and your sense of community and the goals that you're trying to make better habits, the brain knows which neural pathways it wants to emphasize. And so maybe it's right now it's one neuron thick. And so now after you're taking the microdosing, the brain says, okay, we're going to make that a double lane highway now. And so we can actually handle more bandwidth. And so over time, these more joyous neural pathways start to grow, while the trauma and erratic, or if you're neurodivergent, chaotic pathways get de-emphasized. The third bucket, which is the cutting edge of psilocybin research, is in neurogenesis. When we were young, they told us that when you kill your brain cells, they're gone forever. But this is not actually true. We continually make brain cells, new neurons throughout our life, but it does slow down as we get older. This is called neurogenesis. And as our brain creates less neurons, especially dopamine excreting neurons, the youthful plasticity of our brain hardens. And so we want to continue to be making these brain cells for as long as we can. And the science is showing that psilocybin may or may not cause neurogenesis, but it at least creates an environment that neurogenesis seems to happen either. If you're younger, it sustains it for longer. And if you're older, it will often start the neurogenesis process again. This is why we see so much positive results with Parkinson's patients, because if you've ever known people with Parkinson's, they start to get these muscle cramps in their back, which causes them to hunch over, and sometimes in their legs and feet, which make them shuffle. These are contracted muscle sets from a signal being sent to turn on the contraction, and then that's never turned off. And when Parkinson's patients have more dopamine excreting neurons, this allows them more signaling control of their body. I know that's a sudden, very specific example, but the idea is that we want to support our brain to create new neurons for as long into life as we can. And the science is showing that microdosing can do that. So those are the three buckets: the pruning, the redundancy, and neurogenesis.
That is fascinating and kind of myth-busting, if you will, because, you know, the old idea is that when you get drunk, you're killing brain cells and they're gone forever. That does not mean, folks, that you should go out there and get drunk and then do mushrooms just to make your brain cells come back, but it's slow.
What's interesting is that, you know, mushrooms are coming back into vogue now. But before that, of course, the federal government has been clamping down on it. But before that, humans have had an intimate relationship with mushrooms for 30,000 years. And so the old school is actually using mushrooms. This is a return to the ways that humans have always been. And, we have an affinity for them, and they are not dangerous to them. Now, what we might do on them, we need to be careful of, right? But the mushrooms themselves, while technically poisonous, they are not something, for example, like an opiate that like might inhibit your respiratory or your heart or something like that. It's not that kind of a drug.
Can you say more about the historic use? Like you said, I'm guessing indigenous cultures particularly have used mushrooms spiritually. How have they used them?
Sure. I'm not a ethnographer, so I don't want to go too far into this and say something that I'm not accurate about. But we can say that we have seen remnants and of mushroom chemicals in ancient tribal caves and in like the little leather pouches that they find, on old skeletons. Mm-hmm. And so we know that and that's before we even talk about all the cave art related to mushrooms. So we know that these early types of humans understood the power of mushrooms. And also, we also see this throughout nature as well. And even here on Vashon, this is a fun story. So I taught a class on how to cultivate cyanescence mushrooms on your own property because they grow naturally here on Vashon. So I taught this class and I had to take some pictures for it. So I did it in my own yard. And so I got the flush and that's really fun. And then the next year came along and the mushrooms came up again and I never saw a single one because my deer eat them and they sit in my pasture and just look at the wind. And it's funny because you can see all the hoof prints in the pile of wood chips where the mushrooms come up, but I don't get them anymore. They're just for the deer.
Very happy deer
Very happy deer.
Shango's yard. You say that psilocybin mushrooms microdosing is safe. What are the risks?
Well, the first thing I'll say is I am not a medical doctor, and people should talk to their primary physician and do their own research, number one. The primary risk, though, is about taking a dosage and then doing something dumb. It's not really about the mushroom itself. It's more about taking a high dose and then deciding to drive. Or taking a high dose and swimming out further into Colvos than is safe. Or, you know, things like this, the things that you might do. And that's why set and setting are so important. Your positive frame of mind and also being somewhere that is safe and not going to freak out.
Okay, so that's macro dosing.
Correct.
If people are micro dosing on a daily basis, are they essentially operating under the influence, if you will? And
no, the beautiful thing about microdosing is that you often don't even feel it. And that's why the dose is so low at 0.1 of a gram. The idea is that, you know, we don't want to be going through our day hallucinating. It makes it very hard to be otherwise productive, right? But if you're taking this low dose, it kind of just floats into the background. The experiences that most people have are just an increased sense of alertness because your brain chemistry is being rebalanced. And so most people will feel, you know, like uplifted, alerted, not like caffeine where there's a grind, just more awake. And people really like that attribute.
Sure.
But mostly after the first 3 days and the body kind of figures out what you're giving it, it kind of floats into the background and people just forget that they're even taking it. You know, they just take it every day with whatever their normal supplements are and it just goes into the background.
So how about the process of figuring out what is the correct micro dose for you?
Sure. So it's pretty universally accepted that a microdose for most people is 0.1 gram. And that is the amount that is recommended by the two most popular protocols by Paul Stamets and Dr. James Fadiman. And, you know, I talk with a lot of people due to the outreach about their usage of it. And, you know, there are a couple people who that 0.1 is a little much. But these people usually know of themselves as being super sensitive, right? Uh-huh. Because everything they take has got a sensitive aspect to them. So I would say 95 out of 100 people are going to be fine with the 0.1. The last group of people might want to titrate up on a little less to bring them up to a full dose. And then some people, they just enjoy it. So maybe they take two or three, like 0.1s and uh-huh. for their day. But it's part of this idea of individualized medicine. It's safe and you can try it and you can see how you feel. And then if you want to go up or down, you can do that.
And the risks are pretty low.
Yeah, the risks are very low. You don't get any of the risks that you would get with a macro dose for obvious reasons. The primary thing that is mentioned by physicians is that you really want to talk to your doctor if you're on antipsychotics or you have a history of psychotic breaks. And also, if you are on schizophrenic medication, because sometimes it makes the schizophrenic medication more potent. Mm. And so you might actually need to decrease your dosage of some of these medications. So if you're on any kind of a medication like that or a strong SSRI, I would definitely recommend getting your doctor involved.
And regular physicians have no trouble discussing this psilocybin option.
They have a lot of trouble. Your mileage may vary with your regular doctor.
I see.
I would say most of them don't have the experience to help you out. And most of the rest don't want to talk to you about it simply because of their insurance. And so most of this research is work that you're going to do on your own. I learned about it from my neurologist when I had a brain injury in 2011, right before I moved to the island. And he told me, he's like, listen, I highly recommend that you microdose psilocybin, but I cannot recommend that to you. So, you know, if you can get it, you should try it. And so that's started. And I was already teaching cannabis medicine then. And so it was a very short path to start this other research. I know that people have got a lot of issues around AI, but because AI was trained on medical texts, ChatGPT is actually really great for asking psilocybin mushroom related questions to, in case you don't have any other source.
You are listening to Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon. I'm Susan McCabe, your host, and I am talking with Islander Shango Lose about psilocybin as medicine. Shango, you related your own personal experience with psilocybin after having a brain injury. How did that help?
Well, a couple things. Number one, immediately after a brain injury, your brain is inflamed and honestly confused, and it is making new neural pathways to encode these experiences that are often not connected to the neural pathways that you were building before the brain injury or whatever. And then as you heal from the brain injury, there needs to be a connection made, bridges and connections between the memories that you encoded before the brain injury and the ones that you are encoding, say, the first 6 months after a brain injury. And so the pruning and the redundancy aspects of microdosing help with that a great deal. So think of it as integration of your memory and experiences before the injury, during the injury, and then after the injury. It kind of like it knits them together. There's also some research that shows that it may help with a decrease of the inflammation of the brain that happens from a traumatic brain injury. And certainly it helps if there is trauma related to the brain injury too, which, you know, there usually is.
You know, I've been reading Michael Pollan's book, How to Change Your Mind.
Great book.
And yes, and he talks about the differences or perhaps the similarities between the mind and the brain, and how psilocybin particularly kind of brings those two together. How would you address that?
Well, without going too far into the mind and quantum thinking, I would say that the thing that mushrooms do is they tend to bring down the perspective structures that we interpret our reality through, and they decrease those and give us a cleaner perspective and vision of what's going on with ourselves and the people around us. And so it removes some of those structures that come from living in society and breaks those down a little bit so that we can perceive the universe as it truly is, and less our interpretation based on expectation.
Huh.
I know, that was a mouthful.
That was a mouthful. And of course, to some people, that's going to sound kind of woo-woo, like in touch with the universe. What does that mean? What does that mean?
Well, I would say it definitely sounds woo-woo to people who haven't experienced it, right? It's very much like trying to explain music to someone who has never heard it. You know, you're like, wait a minute, I can't see it and I can't touch it, but it moves me and inspires me. How can this be? That sounds so woo-woo. It's the same kind of thing, right? It's trying to describe something that you've just never experienced. And this is woo-woo that is supported by a great deal of science at this point. So it can still sound woo, but the advantages are very real and quantifiable.
So, yes, it is gaining a whole lot more respect in science, medical science, I presume, psychiatric science.
For sure. If you go to pubmed.gov and put in psilocybin, you will just get loads and loads of research papers that are available now. You know, less from the United States since it's still a Schedule I drug, but they're researching them all over the world now. And so there's a lot to learn directly from the science, which I really do recommend more than just learning on the internet. That's one of the reasons why I started Vimia back around 2013 on Vashon here, because people were trying to learn about cannabis medicine on the internet and getting all this awful information. And since this was something that I was very studied in, I wanted to make sure that my neighbors got good, clean, reliable information. And that's why we started the Vimia Cannabis Outreach Group. And now we're doing that same thing with mushrooms to help make sure that people understand how they can use them safely and to answer their questions.
So I'm wondering how you see the future of mushroom microdosing in terms of medical care, medical progress, psychiatric, psychological treatment. How do you see the future?
I'll answer that in two ways. First, I definitely see the pharmaceutical companies trying to isolate and exploit this biochemical for financial gain. One of the interesting things we're finding, though, is that when they isolate psilocybin and give that to patients, it does not have as good of an effect as when they take the entire fruiting body of the mushroom.
Oh.
And I don't necessarily mean eating the mushroom. They could be making a tea with it. But the idea is that there are these secondary metabolites in it that that we think are going to end up being pretty important. And you can't trademark nature. So it'll be interesting to see how the pharmaceutical companies decide to, standardize and exploit it. We're also going to see a resurgence of it just simply at the people level, at the neighbors level. There are more and more people on the island who are cultivating for themselves. There are more people who are self-proclaimed mycologists on the island and elsewhere. And certainly with the increased availability, there's a lot more people talking about their experiences with both macro and micro doses and sharing those, which just adds to the swell of interest.
And as you talk about that, I'm thinking mushrooms can be poisonous. Mushrooms can be wrong. So how would you suggest people safely acquire whatever psilocybin they might need for microdosing or macrodosing for that matter?
Sure. So let's start at the top with the obvious. I mean, it's kind of a rite of passage for youth on Vashon to wildcraft cyanescens mushrooms here on the island.
Really?
And yeah, they're very psychedelic and they do their job. And I know many people who have grown up on the island that said, oh yeah, that's, we would get them out in the field and then eat them and then go to class and, at the high school. And so I've heard lots of those stories from locals. But the challenge with that is at least twofold. One, is that, there are at least two varieties of mushrooms that look just like cyanescens on the island that are very actually poisonous.
That's scary.
And so you have to be very clear about what you want to, which ones you want. And then second, there is this thing called wood lover's paralysis. And there's research in Europe suggesting that cyanescens may actually inhibit your nervous system at certain doses. And so I don't recommend cyanescens to people at all. The best ways to get these mushrooms are either to grow your own. It's very legal to buy the spores online, or two, to purchase mushrooms that somebody else has grown and make your own capsules, or three, to purchase capsules from a neighbor on the island that are pre-made. All of those opportunities exist on the island.
If people want to know more about psilocybin, mushrooms, how to use them for mental health, where do they go?
Well, the first thing I'm going to recommend is you come to the free microdosing class that we've got coming up on July the 11th. We've been teaching these classes for about a year and a half now. To be able to join this free class from 10 to 11 on Saturday, June 11th, just simply RSVP to Vimia, V-I-M-E-A, at protonmail.com. You can also follow the Vimea Facebook page to keep up on upcoming events as well. If you also want to check out my podcast, where I do several episodes on mushrooms and a whole lot on cannabis, you can find that at shapingfire.com.
Wow, we came to the right guy. There's, I'm sure, a whole lot more. We've got like 30 seconds, Shango Lose. What would you like people to walk away from this interview with?
I would like them to understand that there is truth to the idea that don't panic, it's organic. This is not like so many other drugs that have got a danger profile that's high. If you do your homework in advance, and if you start with slow amounts or low amounts, and you have your headspace and your location set, you can have a beautiful experience.
Thank you, Shango Lose. And thank you, dear listeners, for listening to Real Talk, for joining me on this Real Talk special. I am grateful for your attention, and please stay tuned to the Voice of Vashon. You never know what might come next.